Blog Talk Radio.
And at 12 o'clock, it's Talking Sports with Mike T. I'm your host, Mike Tramatozzi. I'm with you for the next half hour. Got a lot to go over today. A lot. It's a big sports weekend. Just had the British Open. Crazy ending with Ernie Els and Adam Scott. Got the college football game ready to start in a couple weeks. NFL training camps open at the end of the week. Obviously, baseball heading after the All-Star break into its stretch run. But the main story today, and we'll have Jordan Lauterbach on with us in about 10 minutes to talk about it, is the Penn State penalties that have been issued by the NCAA. If you didn't hear it this morning, Mark Emmert came out and basically didn't give the death penalty, but he pretty much gave Penn State a terminal illness, the way I look at it. $60 million fine, 4-year postseason ban, 4-year scholarship reduction with a maximum of 15 scholarships per year and only allowing 65 scholarships on the roster for those 4 years, which is huge because if you think about it, regular team is 85 players and you're talking about taking away 20 players per year off that team, which is really, really bad because it's going to take them a while to get back to those. That's 80 players they're going to lose over the next 4 years that they can't now put on their roster. Forget the vacating of the wins. That does nothing to the program except put Bobby Bowden back as the number one wins leader in Division I. It is interesting to see what is going to happen now to Penn State because you have a team now that for the next 4 years, and Jesse Palmer was on SportsCenter this morning saying it could be 8 years before they're even worthy and ready, a team that's worth going to a bowl. This is going to be bad for Penn State. It's going to take a while for Penn State to come back from this. They're not going to be good. Who knows how many players are going to leave? They're able to leave and play immediately. So this is interesting. When this came out yesterday that they were going to be unprecedented penalties, this is pretty close. 20 scholarships over 4 years is a lot of scholarships. That's 80 players. And they're going to be playing with 65 players. Who knows? That puts you very thin at key spots because, say, a normal team has, 85 players. That allows them to have 6 wide receivers, 8 offensive linemen, 6 cornerbacks. So who knows what they're going to be in terms of what they decide to keep in terms of a roster and a depth chart, because that's not a lot of players when you figure 22 are starting. Then you figure, there's they may not even have the scholarships to offer players. But I want to bring in Jordan Lauterbach, who's, for the most part, we've agreed on how this should have gone. And I want to get his take on what actually went down. What's up, Jordan?
Hey, Mike. Glad to be with you.
So, obviously, when we heard yesterday that the NCAA was planning unprecedented penalties for Penn State, it's pretty close that this is unprecedented because a lot of people wanted the death penalty. And I think it was Bomani Jones who said, it's not a death penalty, but it's a terminal illness.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. And they said yesterday it's not going to be the death penalty. It's going to be worse. I was actually for the death penalty for a number of reasons. Some obvious, some less obvious. However, I just read a stat 2 seconds ago, right before I called you on Twitter. I don't know if you mentioned it already, but they fined the program $60 million.
Yeah.
Last year, the total football revenue was $53 million.
Oh, yeah. So, they said it was like the equivalent of like the gross revenue from a normal football season. So that's think about that. That means that they're making no money this year.
Yeah, and they're making no money, and they're losing. You know, if things match, which they won't, because revenue is going to go down. Just A, because of this. B, because of people just being rightly disgusted. So revenue is going to go down from $53 million. Because you got to remember, this didn't break until November, so the football season was basically over at that point. Look, I was disgusted by this whole incident. I don't think anything would have been too harsh. I was an advocate of getting rid of the program for a couple years, not just one. But right now, I'm, you know, from a really anti-Penn State standpoint, I think the NCAA did a fantastic job. The one thing I was a little surprised by, and it seems a bit petty, but I understand it, were the vacation of the wins. I understand it. I was surprised by it. I did not think they touched anything on the field. But obviously, it's not because they believe in any ineligibility. It's because of the trivia question. And they don't want Joe Paterno being the answer to the who is the all-time winning coach in the NCAA trivia question. And they don't want him connected with that record. So that's clearly why they did it. I still think that's strange. And if Penn State fans, and I was on a Penn State website 25, 30 minutes ago, and, you know, they're delusional people. And they are. You know, if you go to Penn State, you're kind of banged into this fraternal philosophy that Penn State is not just the greatest thing that's happened to you, but the greatest thing that's happened to everyone else around you. I think that's ridiculous. You know, I didn't go to Notre Dame, obviously, but if this happened in Notre Dame, I'd be just as disgusted. Probably more so because I have a deep connection to it, being that I love them. So I don't understand the idea that none of this is deserved, but I guess when you've been conditioned in a cult-like manner for the last, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, depending upon how old you are and you know, especially if you're still in the school. And I spoke to a Penn State grad yesterday, and, you know, he wasn't in favor of the death penalty, but wasn't, you know, delusional like the people who were trying to save the statue.
You mean like the Paterno family?
Yeah, the Paterno family. No, I mean, it's their dad, so I'm not going to get...
Do you find it weird that Jay Paterno never refers to him as dad? He refers to him as Joe Paterno?
I wonder if that's how we actually refer to him in life. Like, Joe Paterno, what do you want for dinner? Is this chicken cooked to your liking, Joe Paterno?
He calls him Joe Pa.
But,
You don't call Joe Paterno. You don't call Joe Paterno dad.
But no, I think you had to get rid of it. And look, I'm going to be a bit hypocritical here. You and I talked last season about how I, in reference to USC, I generally thought future punishment was unfair, and that's in the the case of, like, taking away bold and stuff for the discretions of those who came before the players that are currently there. But in this case, and I still believe that for cases of monetary infractions, such as what happened in USC, but this was criminal, and something had to be done big, and I do support, obviously I was for the death penalty, so obviously I'm for the bowl sanctions. I do support this. I do think that the NCAA has to kind of make sure that Penn State goes in the hole, to use a prison terminology, little Shawshank Redemption coming at you. I think Penn State's got to go in the hole for a while, and I think they did that today.
Sorry, we got you back, Jordan. Sorry about that. But
clearly, the ghost of Joe Paterno knocked me off the air.
Exactly. We just got hijacked by the ghost of Joe Paterno. But I don't think, and they showed on SportsCenter a lot of people from Penn State students who were like, oh, you know, we'll be back in 4 years. This is no problem. You know, this stinks now, but we'll be back better than ever. I don't think they understand how. They don't know how bad this is going to get. 65 scholarships for 4 years is brutal. When they're talking about USC with 73 or whatever they've got this year, and they're saying, listen, one or two big injuries and we're done because we have no depth. 65 is like nothing.
Absolutely. Penn State's, you know, I don't know if I got cut off before I said this, but Penn State's going to the hole.
Yeah. And they can't go to the Big Ten title game. They have to forfeit their share of the revenue to the Big Ten. So that's another $13 million. They don't get to go to the Big Ten title game. They basically are just going to be playing, you know, they're going to be playing 12 football games for the heck of playing 12 football games.
It's club football. At
exactly.
Penn State for the
they're
next,
gonna get,
you know.
They're going to get slaughtered by the Big Ten. Who knows how many? First off, how many players are actually going to leave? I mean, if you're Cyrus Redd, do you stay at Penn State as a junior?
Absolutely not. I leave. You know what? And one of the reasons why I was concerned about the death penalty and not concerned for the death penalty is I'm concerned about the players. And like it or not, and be it unfair as it might be, and it certainly is. September 1st, when they step on the field, they're wearing the Penn State helmet. And right now, the Penn State helmet is a symbol of sexual abuse of children. And, I mean, they're the face of this scandal, like it or not, when they're, you know, 11 guys at a time running around on a field wearing the helmet or the jersey of what is now the face of child abuse in America. How is that fair to those kids?
And they did a good job with it by allowing them to transfer immediately and not lose playing time. You wonder how many players are going to take, because if it was a regular transfer rule, perhaps maybe they stay because who wants to lose a year? But the fact that they can leave immediately, I guarantee you Urban Meyer, Brady Hoke, Les Miles, Saban, they're all on the phone with, I guarantee you they're on the phone with some of those kids' parents right now. I guarantee it. It's not like Penn State only recruited these guys and there was no, talk up of those guys. Nowadays, with recruiting being nationally all around, I guarantee you those coaches have already built up at least some semblance of conversation with those parents back when those kids were being recruited and now are going right back to it. Who knows how many kids get poached out of Penn State. You could be talking about, like, worst-case scenario. This team, in the next And Jesse Palmer, I mentioned it when I opened, said 8 years before they're even relevant to go to a bowl game in terms of their play and their record. It might be worse. It could be worse.
I think it'll be about 12.
This is where it took SMU. Well, it took SMU till 20 years to get. It took SMU 20 years to get to a bowl game, or to have a winning record. Their scholarship level is at a 1AA level right now. 15 scholarships max for the next 4 years, and you can only have 65 players on your roster. What player is going to go to Penn State?
Well, and that's just the point. What player is going to go to Penn State now? Forget the bowl bans. Forget the sanctions. Forget all this. What parent is sending their kid to Penn State?
See, I don't even think I don't think it has something to do with that, because I think you have to trust the current coach, and he's a different person, and I think you trust the coach who's there. I don't think it's so much they're not going to want to send him for what happened. No kid's going to want to go there because they can't play.
In a perfect world, yes. But all you've heard about in the – and remember, high school recruiting is the most what have you done for me lately thing in America. It's you've seen guys – you saw that guy from Alabama to Auburn decommit last week. It is literally – I was watching the Marcus Dupree 30 for 30 yesterday afternoon on ESPNU, and that was mostly about recruiting. These guys change their mind every second, and since, November 10th or whenever this broke, Penn State has been linked with child abuse. And even that, you're going to get kids who aren't recruited by anyone else.
You're going to be getting those the kids that go to Appalachian State or, you're going to be getting those kids. But I don't know what those, if I'm maybe it's just me, but I think you feel the same, you would be the same exact way. If I'm a high school player and there's no, there's no way I can play for a national championship, there's no way I can play in the Rose Bowl, there's no way I can play in the Big Ten title game, why am I going?
Exactly. No, I'm the same way. And if I'm recruited by two schools, and one of those schools is Penn State, why am I picking Penn State?
Exactly. Yeah, there's no reason to pick Penn State. There's no reason to pick Penn State unless you are a Penn State fan and you don't care about anything else except saying, I played for Penn State, and it's something that's personal to you. That's it. You may get a couple kids from Pennsylvania that think that way. But you're not getting the kids from New Jersey anymore. You're not getting the kids from Ohio anymore. You're not getting the kids from Indiana anymore. You're not getting those players anymore.
And it's bad with the New Jersey kids. If my recruiting final two is Penn State and a school like Rutgers,
I'm going to Rutgers.
And if you had said that even 2 years ago, people would have rightly laughed in your face.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I don't see where they're going. And I think they become the almost what Indiana used to be in the Big Ten for the longest time, although Indiana's gotten better. They're that school that you now are going to want to put as your homecoming game. That's what Penn State's become now. They're going to be a two-win team. They're going to win a game against a 1AA team, and they're going to get slaughtered by Ohio State. They're going to get slaughtered by Michigan. They're going to get destroyed by Michigan State, Wisconsin. Those are the four best teams in the Big Ten right now, and they're going to destroy Penn State.
And the quality of athlete, and this is why I was very curious about the scholarship thing from a safety perspective. It's not like, the 20s and no one's dying on the field. But in that conference, the quality of athlete that Penn State is going to recruit physically is going to be so overmatched by basically everyone else in the conference that it's going to be, on some Saturdays, a comical display of football ineptitude.
And I forgot about Nebraska.
Yeah.
Don't forget about Nebraska.
That might be the most physical. It's probably the SEC, but the Big Ten is definitely number two. The most physical conference in the nation, and you're going to have one-double-A kids going up against, you know, all
the high-level 1A student, not like a. You know, a kid that goes to Boise. Not that there's any, like, but there's a level between the kid that goes, and there still is, although it may be a little bit small, the level of the kid that goes to Michigan and Ohio State and the kid that goes to Air Force and, you know, Boise State. They might be better off trying to get into the Big East.
Yeah, regardless, it's going to be, whether it's high level or low level, whether you're playing at, you know, Villanova, which is a high-level 1A school, or you're playing at, I don't even know, a low-level 1A school.
They might not be
still,
like a Temple.
Yeah,
that's
you're
a low
still
1A school.
Yeah, you're still a 1A school, and you're still 1A talent. And when you step into the Big House in the middle of October, do you think that game will be a 30-point margin? No way.
Yeah, it's not going to be good for Penn State. By the way, one last thing before we move on. I want to talk about the British Open. Here's this quote from – have you seen this quote from Paterno about the SMU death penalty?
No, I haven't. What is it?
It's unbelievable to think that kind of corruption came right from the top of the power structure. The NCAA did what it had to do regarding SMU's death penalty in 88.
Well, it's, he's not talking about his own school, so,
And what's funny is he always had an remember when he, I'm sure you've heard the story about how Nixon made Texas the national champ over Penn State in 69, and then when, Watergate broke, Paterno goes, well, maybe he shouldn't have been so worried about sticking his nose into college football. It all comes back to roost, and it's amazing. It really is amazing. But moving on, I was at the 12 o'clock noon showing of The Dark Knight Rises yesterday, seeing it for the second time, and missed a good chunk of the final round of the British Open, but I did watch it on DVR, and boy, that is a tough way to lose if you're Adam Scott.
That is a tough way to lose. Four bogeys in a row, and he had played up until hole number one on the four hole, 15 or 16. 15,
because he birdied 14 to get back to 10 under, and you think kind of stabilized everything there.
He had played exactly the way you have to play with the lead on a major Sunday. If he had won, we are talking about, this is the textbook, how to keep a lead, not taking unnecessary risks, making pars when you have to, just par, 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 just treading water and watching the field burn behind you. But,
and you know who played that way? Tiger played that way for five holes, and then played that way for the final 12 holes.
You know, Tiger seems to have the same major Sunday for the last four majors now, where like around hole seven, he has a blow-up hole and just can't recover.
Yeah, I thought his style was interesting because it kind of, he wasn't going for it, and I think he was more comfortable hitting irons on his second shot and just playing a safe tee shot. But I just don't know. He continually left himself 15, 20-foot putts. And the first 2 days, he hit a good amount of them. But Saturday and Sunday, he left them, how many birdies on his first four holes did he leave a foot short. You know, two feet short. A foot past the hole. You know, it didn't break the way it wanted to. It died out. That, you know, sometimes that's good. And if he didn't, say he bogeys that hole, just bogeys it, he's still sitting there one shot off the lead. Who knows how the rest of the round plays off if he's sitting there, or how he plays the rest of the round if you know, he's sitting there at 5-under instead of 3-under or 6-under. Who knows?
I think he played the first couple holes the way he probably should have played the first couple holes, and figuring, look, guys are going to crumble around me, and I will just wait. And around 12, 13, I'll start just going for pins and being aggressive. And that'll, you know, I won't have to be aggressive for that long to win this tournament. Which, you know what, if he doesn't have that blow-up hole, he's probably correct. I mean, because look what happened. But it just seems like there's one or two holes on Sunday every tournament that ruins the round and he can't come back from. Which, you know, I like Tiger Woods. I want to see him win again. And yesterday was yet another bummer, because I really thought mid-round Saturday afternoon, this was the one.
Yeah, I think he left himself in contention, but it was and what's funny is he played kind of unaggressive, let's say, for the most part.
But I think that was his plan. I think the aggression was coming later, but the triple bogey was that.
Oh no, I agree, but the whole shot out of the bunker that caused all the problems was an aggressive play.
Mm-hmm.
It was an aggressive play, and it was out of character for what he played. You look at what Adam Scott did on 18. He chipped it out and then hit a really good third shot and left himself a very makeable par putt. If Tiger had done that, who knows how the round plays out. He tried to go for it, kind of like what he did. I think it was on 2, and he hit just an amazing bunker shot and almost holed it, too.
Yeah.
So it's funny, he played the whole round as this kind of conservative, I'm going to sit and I'm going to bide my time. I'm just going to sit here. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to say par, 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 and then strike when I have to. And then he makes an aggressive play and it completely and utterly backfires on him.
And I really believe that he will win another major.
He's getting closer. Because if you look at it,
because if you think about where he was last year, he was on the he was not even in contention, you know. And this is the third major where we've gone into Sunday and thought, well, maybe. Well, he hasn't, you know, been there at the top like he normally is. But at least he's not as irrelevant as he was last season, and I think that, you know, I think the writing off of Tiger is still premature.
I think so, because I think if you look at it, he really wasn't in contention in the Masters. He had a really bad Friday at the Masters. He had a really bad Saturday at the U.S. Open. He had a bad Sunday. That means there's no more bad days to have, unless he has a terrible Thursday at the PGA. That means his best chance is going to be the PGA, because he's run out of the ability to have bad days. If he had a bad Friday and Saturday and Sunday, what else is he going to do? Have a bad Thursday?
Yeah, and you know, bad Thursdays are way more, they're easier to make up than a bad Saturday or, you know, a bad
Sunday
off.
And what was interesting about it was how it's interesting. The Masters is the same course every year, so you're kind of aware of how to play it. Sometimes you get high scores, sometimes you get low scores. The U.S. Open and the British Open normally are designed to where it's really low scoring. You know, -2, -3, even par at sometimes has won these tournaments. The PGA to me always seems to be designed for high scoring. You know, 8-under, 9-under. Usually wins the PGA, and I think that's kind of more adaptable to Tiger's game. He usually likes to go for it, and I think without a course that usually says, okay, there's these really big penalties if I mess up, I think he can play a little bit freer at the PGA than he can, than you could say at the U.S. Open or at the British Open.
Well, here's the thing with the British Open. The U.S. Open, the course is hard. The British Open, what makes it hard is the weather.
Exactly.
And this week, the weather was extremely mild.
Until Sunday. If you look at the scores of everybody, McDowell shot 5 over, Tiger shot 3 over, Snedeker was 4 over, Scott was 4 over. You know, Ernie was at, what, 2 under or something? And I think the best score of the day was Kolsarts.
Yeah, but the
And he went off in the morning.
Yeah, the first 3 days were extremely mild, especially Thursday. And, you know, how much... You don't often see sun at the British Open. You really don't. And,
no.
And
even Sunday morning... Even Sunday morning was very sunny.
Yeah, you never see sun at the British Open, and you saw it a lot this year.
We didn't get our fair share of British Open sweaters either.
No, but this was a bit of a different British Open for me because usually I'm not on vacation. This year I was, but. We didn't have the greatest weather of all time in the Poconos this week or last week, so I was able to watch a very large portion of it the first 3 days, and then, of course, yesterday I was, you know, as into it as I always am on Major Sunday.
Yeah, I always enjoy the British Open because... Usually you have to wait till 3:30, 4 o'clock for anybody to get going. If you wake up at 9:30, you know Tiger Woods is starting his final round, so it's like not a whole day, because I think it was over by like 2:30, but still,
it was better
than
one.
Yeah, the last two were good because the U.S. Open went late into the night, which was cool, and then this was early in the morning.
I mean, I'm a late sleeper. I sleep normally till like 11:30 or noon. So I actually don't like the British Open for that reason. I'm very bad at getting up early. So I actually would prefer the leaders to tee off at like, you know, 2:30 or, you know, the U.S. Open was perfect teeing off at 5. So I was not in love with the British Open. I never am in terms of a start time thing, but London was not terrible. I mean, it could be a lot worse.
Yeah, actually, it's...
Last year was tough. Last year was tough because I think it was the farthest... I guess the farthest east it could be was last year, wherever it was. And
wasn't it in... Was it in Ireland?
No, it was in Scotland, I think.
Yeah.
Next year, I think it's in Ireland. But no, last year was tough with the times, but this year was doable, which, you know, it was...
Yeah.
The leaders teed off in the 10 o'clock hour on Saturday and the 9 o'clock hour yesterday, so it was certainly doable, but no, give me, you know, your final group goes off at 3:30. That's my kind of major stunt.
Well, that's usually how it'll go. They were what? They were 6 o'clock at the U.S. Open.
And I watched the Mets till 5 o'clock. I didn't shower yesterday till 5:15.
The Mets didn't end up till like 5:30.
And I didn't even watch the whole game. After they scored 6 runs in the top of the 12th, I said, well, this is over. And then it was shower time for me at, you know, 5:15 in the afternoon.
Exactly. One last thing before I let you go, because we're up against the end.
Good.
The Mets are done. You've moved on to Notre Dame and the Jets. Training camp starts next week. Are you done with the Mets, or...
I'm never done with the Mets until football actually begins playing games. I'm done with the delusion that the Mets will make the playoffs. But
you're not worried about what they're going to get at the trade deadline? We're past the trade deadline. Harvey comes up on Thursday. Would you be shocked if you see Wheeler at some point by the end of the year?
No, not at all. I think you will. I think that's a foregone conclusion. I think at least September, if not beforehand. I would be surprised if Santana, you know, is back when he says he's going to be back. But, yeah, I'm done. This is, I'll leave you with this. It's kind of baseball history because I really do believe you're watching the worst bullpen of all time.
I mean, they even brought in R.A. Dickey, and then he gave up two runs. The bullpen affects everybody.
There must be some radiation out there. I don't know, but it's just they can't get any. And actually, you know what? They made a good point. The bullpen was decent yesterday. They just ran out of gas in the 12th inning. I mean, you know, if it's not one thing, it's the other. But, you know, you can't go out of the gate and be 1-9. And I'm actually going tomorrow night, so hopefully they win tomorrow night. But, yeah, you know me. I was excited during the All-Star break. I really was. But that was tempered. You know, and maybe you should have saw it because it really started a week before the All-Star break when they, you know, lost 4 out of 6 to the Cubs. But, I say it every time, get me to September 1st.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, the Yankees are the Yankees. They'll go. I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see on Thursday. You think Harvey's up and he's not going down?
Oh, yeah, they're not bringing him up to go down. I mean, that's why they DFA'd Batista. A, because he stinks. B, because they knew there was no room for him.
What about C, his comment on Friday that, I think we're the best team in baseball, we just need to play like it?
Yeah, well, I don't like it. I mean, I didn't really pay much attention to that. I mean, I wish they were the best team in baseball, though typically the best team in baseball doesn't lose 4-6 to the worst team in baseball, but, you know, I'll be watching tonight. I'll be there tomorrow. I'll be watching every night until football season, but instead of cheering, I'll be shaking my head.
When do the Jets start training camp?
Friday.
So do the Giants. I think they all start the 27th.
I think rookies report Thursday. The first full practice is Friday, and then August 10th, they play the Bengals, I believe.
Football season's here, Jordan. Are you excited?
It's my favorite thing in the world, so yeah.
All right. I'm going to let you go because I now have to actually end the show and call DirecTV and figure out how to get my Sunday ticket back.
Oh, okay. Well, that should be a fun evening.
Yeah, it might take that long.
Yes.
All right, Jordan, I'll talk to you later.
So long.
That was Jordan Lauerbach from WCWB Sports and Patch.com out on Long Island. We are up against the time. I'd like to thank everybody for listening, and hopefully I see everybody back here next week. Take care.